selling.
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, don't bet Sacks and Jacks. Time out. Ricky on the board. SP futures up 20. NASDAQ futures up 90. Dow futures up 166 as we're celebrating, I guess. Well, we're just up. I don't know what we're celebrating. We're celebrating something. A lot of executive orders flying around. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do. You do. Come on. You know full well what everyone is celebrating.
Just remind me if it's ever my turn to at least look like I'm reading them.
Well, I actually did read all of them.
Well, then you're one step ahead of the POTUS.
Well, no, that's actually not true this time, I don't think. you know, it is extraordinarily rare for a politician to say, on the first day I'm going to do, and then the litany comes out, right?
Yeah.
They always do that part. They always do that part. Extremely rare for on the first day the politician to actually do the things he said he was going to do while he was campaigning.
Yeah, except for the fact that, most of the stuff they're supposed to do, if you use the Constitution correctly, should go through Congress first. Now this new executive order banter is a little bizarre.
Well, now hold on a minute here. Chief, I don't recall you being nearly as upset at the idea of Joe Biden.
Sure, I was. I've been saying for years that this is no way to govern. Every time somebody gets in, they reverse all the other guys' crap.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. It's not just that it's no way to govern. It is endemic, and it is also the reason that the scam formation within our country and the reliance on it within business is an unchecked hurricane. And by the way, it's going to lead to a crack-up.
Sure it is. I don't think there's any question with that. We have lost confidence in our system at every level.
I mean, you take as I've pointed out many times, the reason we don't have a cogent nuclear policy in the United States, the reason we don't have cogent nuclear power in the United States, which incidentally is reliable baseload generation capacity, okay? It is one of the things you absolutely have to have. I don't care I don't care what fuel you use to get it. I mean, nuclear energy is just a way to boil water. That's when you get down to it. It's all
sure,
it is.
Yeah. It all is. Right. It all is.
Yeah, it's just a big tea kettle, right? But you have to have that stable baseload capacity. Yesterday, when I woke up, the average temperature across the United States was 15 degrees Fahrenheit.
Was that what, 15?
15 when I woke up. I'd have to look this morning. I didn't. I'm not through my second espresso yet. But when I got up yesterday, it was 15 Fahrenheit.
This cold spell does not seem all that horrible, but it sure seems widespread.
Well, that's... yes.
That's what you're talking about. That's what you're talking about.
Well, I'm talking about
We're 5 below here. 5 below is not horrible for this time of the year. But the fact that it's like 0 in Indianapolis and damn near the same in Nashville, that's unusual.
Well, 16.2 on my front porch right now.
Yeah, and you're. By the way, what is
I'm in Tennessee.
I wish you were around yesterday. I almost sent you a text. What is what the hell was I talking to? I was talking to somebody way south, and they said it was like 20. What's the gain on a heat pump?
Well, So here's the thing. I have a high efficiency unit. Okay, but it's also it's dual fuel, which I insisted on when the one that was in the house when I bought it started getting long in the tooth and acting up. It was It was still functioning okay, but, you know. And I didn't like the condition of the heat exchanger inside the house, and it was one of the old units with the refrigerant. It was R22, and you can get the refrigerant. It can't be made anymore because it was banned by the Montreal Protocol. So the problem is if you have a leak, you know, let's say your heat exchanger decides to puke and leaks all the refrigerant, okay, fine. The heat exchanger core is, you know, $500. The refrigerant is $1,500.
Right? Because, well, that's not so good.
Well, because all you can get is reclaimed, you know, that's been sucked out of somebody else's unit and then cleaned, right? So, you know, run through a filter. They can't make it anymore. It's illegal. So as a result, just like with machine guns and with anything else that the government says you can't make, the price goes up astronomically. And when I looked at the condition of this thing, I'm like, look, am I going to get through this winter without having that happen? And, oh, by the way, if it does, having it done in February when it's 5 below 0 out is not going to be a fun time. Never mind the fact that then I get bent over the table on having it done on an emergency basis instead of being able to shop and, you know, this. So I went in and I changed it. But I said, look, no way am I going to put up with the fact that given the crazy mandates that are out there, that I cannot choose the fuel based upon price. You know, it's basic economics, right? I run the cheaper one. So it's high efficiency, so I got the tax credits and all that stuff. But at the same time, the reality is that depending on the price of the power, depending on the price of the gas, the balance point calculation, which is just a mathematical formula, it's pretty easy, changes from month to month. Currently, it's about 26. I think it changes over 26 or 25 degrees. My computer system that runs the house takes care of it. You punch in the cost per kilowatt hour. You punch in the cost per therm when you get each of the bills, and it makes the adjustments. But it has been running now on gas for the last 2.5 days. It has not tripped off onto heat pump during the day, which it normally does. I mean, you know, normally in the wintertime, when it's, you know, when it's 15, it uses the gas. When it warms up, it gets to about 25.
Well, there's allegedly a line, what we're talking about here. If you have a traditional gas or, I guess, even an oil furnace or whatever, it can be 20 below, and the thing will keep heating until it gets to 70. It just keeps going. But the, because the fire is pretty hot in the thing, right? Duh. Heat pump. I think I read once that if you're somewhere like in southern Illinois, south, you really should only need a heat pump, which actually is your air conditioner and your heater.
Well, that's not true, Chief. It entirely depends upon the cost of the electricity and the cost of the gas.
Well, I'm saying I read this once. That's why I'm asking.
Right. Well, that's BS.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. The thing is that which you want to now.
Well, I'll rephrase. In other words, You can get away with a heat pump from southern Illinois south if that's the story, but today, no.
Well, get away with is a relative term, okay, because if the heat pump is incapable of extracting enough heat to raise the temperature of the house.
Well, what's the normal, a 15-year-old heat pump gets you what, 40 degrees or something?
Well, it's not that simple. It's a curve, okay, because all a heat pump does, air conditioner is the same thing,
right,
is move heat. It doesn't generate heat, it moves heat. So it takes heat from the out, you know, in the summer you take heat from the inside and you move it outdoors. That's why the coil is hot, air coming out of it. In the winter, the opposite is the case. You're taking heat from the outside, you're moving it inside. The problem is that the efficiency of doing that goes down because there's less heat to extract as the temperature goes down outside. And so the amount of energy you need to expend to move a usable amount of heat goes up. And at a certain point, the house loses energy through the walls and the windows faster than it can do that. All right. Now, once you get to there, a heat pump trips onto strips, which are just resistance heaters like a space heater. Okay. And, oh, God, you do not want to know what your power
looks like.
Right. Once that happens, I mean, yeah, you have heat, but oh God,
we used to go skiing out in Steamboat, and the whole place was electric.
Yeah.
And man, those guys—if they wanted you to buy condos, out there and rent them out. Well, the cost of regular electric heat, that's why, you know, this is kind of so bizarre. Well, we talked about it a million times. But we got all kinds of other stuff to talk about today, but if you burn the gas in your own furnace, you're what, like 90 or 95% efficient or something? If you burn it...
Well, it depends on the furnace.
Right.
Your traditional one that has a regular stack, a hot stack, is about 80%. But the modern ones, which, you know, again, I wanted the tax credit, so I went ahead and I paid for the, you know, the better, are 95. And the exhaust actually comes out of a plastic pipe.
Well, if you burn the gas 80 miles away or 200 miles away and pump it over a wire and everything else, then heat stuff
losses,
in your house, the losses is dramatic.
Anyway,
but eventually Steamboat got natural gas, and boy, everybody couldn't wait to put it in.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was growing up, we had oil heat, and the city eventually came through with a main, okay? And so, you know, now there's a gas pipe out in the front yard,
right? They still have a lot of... oil in New England?
Oil is actually number two diesel.
Right.
It's just died because you didn't pay road tax on it. So it's seriously illegal, like go to jail illegal if you stick that in a car or a truck and get caught. And you don't need to put very much in there either. That dye is something else. I used to run dyed fuel in my boat because it's legal to do that, and why would you pay road tax on something that doesn't go on a road, right? But if you put that in a, you know, car or a truck, it'll probably be 10 tanks of fuel before that dye is actually gone. So if you get caught doing that, they're real serious about it too. They're not kidding. So,
well, we have a good man. My grandmother used to have that, and the guy'd show up with a big oil truck and a big hose, and all of a sudden he'd fill up that monster tank in the basement, and off they'd go. What is propane is. Propane is not natural gas. Propane is an oil product, correct?
So propane is just heavier constituents. It comes off of the same. It comes off wells, okay. But it is propane is just a heavier thing from a standpoint of the actual fuel. So natural gas is methane, okay. It's CH4. It's a very light molecule. It is very, very hard to liquefy it, and as a result, it's transported as a gas. In order to make it liquid, you have to cool it to cryogenic temperatures, no matter the pressure.
Why did we ban all this crazy stuff yesterday? You know, these executive orders. I'm not. As you probably can tell, I'm not big on unfunded mandates.
Yeah, neither am I. But I, you know, yeah.
Now is this guy going to write a check to everybody that now has to change their map to Gulf of America from Gulf of Mexico?
Well, didn't we do that in Mount McKinley not very long ago?
When I say this guy, I'm saying anybody who does stuff like this.
It's not that everybody has. It's that the official, if you look something up on a map that, is published after the date of the change, it will have the other name on it.
Well, I mean, we went from Hoover Dam to Boulder Dam to Hoover Dam, right?
Well, yeah, and there was this huge thing about, we have to take MacDill and all the different Air Force bases and stuff during Biden's time in office. They are, anything that had anything to do with anybody before MLK got renamed, because God forbid you can't have anything that might be a Confederate, general's name on it. This sort of stuff is it's all posturing. It doesn't do anything.
It's a total waste of time.
Well, it makes money for the people that make signs.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of stuff. As far as
what do you think it costs to change the mayor in Chicago, and all of a sudden, you're entering Chicago, Carl Denninger mayor or something? I mean,
it's the same thing every time they have a governor's change.
Yeah, a governor or Cook County, Cook County Forest Preserve, Ricky Garcia, new commissioner or something. I'd love to be in that business. I'd love to be in any business with the government.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. I mean, one of the other things, the other thing that's kind of interesting is that, on the way out the door, Biden, you know, turned around and pardoned everybody in his family.
Did he pardon you?
He wouldn't do it. He did not. He pardoned Fauci, though, which
I'm stunned on that.
I'm not. I'm not surprised by it at all. And that's actually a rather interesting thing, because there's a lot of precedent on these. Okay, pardons are offered. They're not automatically effective. Okay, you have to accept them. And the reason is that if you accept a pardon, and the Supreme Court has held that this is the case, two things immediately become true. Number one is that you lose your Fifth Amendment protection, because you can't be prosecuted for that thing anymore. All right, so all of a sudden, you now can be compelled to testify. And if you, obviously, if you lie, you know, that's perjury, you can go to prison for that.
When you say compelled, are you put an electric probe up your behind, or what?
You can be subpoenaed, and if you refuse to show up, they can throw you in jail for contempt. And you cannot refuse to answer under the Fifth Amendment, because you can't be prosecuted, so the Fifth Amendment...
You cannot recall.
Well, you can try that game if you want, but that's a dangerous game.
But Fauci was Trump's boy. I don't get that.
Here is the problem with this. It has come out, and it is now established. And by the way, what probably drove this was the release of this report out of the Congress. Health and Human Services formerly debarred EcoHealth Alliance and Peter Daszak. Now, EcoHealth and Daszak is the director, are people that essentially were the fathers of the coronavirus, of COVID.
These are the guys that sent the money to Wuhan and weren't supposed to.
These are the guys that were doing the work on gain of function over in Wuhan. It was under NIH auspices. They were supposed to file reports. They falsified them. The House Oversight Committee dug up enough evidence that this was the case. And the problem here is that that was under Fauci's oversight, his direct oversight.
Carl, how did the thing end up going through North Carolina? I never could get that connection.
Because there's a little university there that
had... Yeah, I went through the university, as I'm saying.
Yep, and the part of the outrage over this, you know, we remember when it first started, it was called the China virus by Trump, right? And, that's not entirely so true. There was a technology transfer, which I uncovered fairly early on, that happened to about 3 months before this thing supposedly existed, back into the United States, into that university. There is a long line of culpability that realistically is criminal in nature. I mean, you're talking about there's a stack of dead bodies all over the world as a result of this thing, right?
Just without making this a long history lesson, we're too late. But I mean, we Obama somewhere signing executive orders, flying back and forth. Didn't he sign an executive order banning gain of function research or something?
He did, and but it was being done anyway.
And then Trump, without probably even knowing about it, reversed it. But I don't think it made any difference, would it?
Trump's reversal wasn't quite as it wasn't a blanket thing, but yes, he lifted some of the constraints.
But it went through, some went to Wuhan through Europe, and some went through the University of North Carolina. From where did it start? These guys you're talking about?
Well, yeah, this is, I mean, and part of this also, the evidence is not completely solid on this, but it's fairly solid, is that an awful lot of it went through a bunch of labs in Ukraine.
Why was somebody so anxious to do this?
Well, so there was a proposal put through DARPA, the defense guys, called Diffuse, quite some time ago. That proposed essentially exactly what was then later done it at, in Wuhan at the lab.
I remember that. There was a proposal here, and it got turned down, correct?
Right. DARPA took a look at it, and the rejection letter and the proposal are both public documents. You don't have to, you're not violating a secret or a top secret clearance in order to, to see them or get them. And essentially what I've seen a lot of grant proposals, my years in the software industry and computer industry, and I've seen, fair number of both, here's the money, and then the, go to hell on the other side. I don't think I've ever seen one out of a government agency that basically said, you guys are nut jobs. This is a violation of the rights of the people there, because you're essentially proposing to do things that could screw the local population without their consent. And that's
this is in China.
Yeah, but this is America, that you're going to screw the Chinese, right? But it was it was DARPA, our Defense Department, that said, bite me.
But in this day and age, though, nobody takes no for an answer.
Obviously not, right? So, I mean, that's, that's what ended up happening. But, the history on this is the thing is that everyone's now screaming because, Trump turned around and pardoned, all the Jan. 6 people. Biden currently holds the record for a number of people pardoned by a president, and the vast majority of them were people that were pardoned in the last month. So I'm kind of tired of hearing people complain about what one person does the other person can't.
Well,
do.
This guy's term is just starting.
Yep.
But it's been going on forever. I'm so aggrieved with talking about a person and a second later, what about the other guy? He's worse. Somehow we have to lose that.
Well, what we, the whole thing about Congress being where this stuff is supposed to reside, it's, as I have pointed out, the only way you are ever going to get an answer to the, to long duration investment, okay, which obviously has to happen if you want, good things, right, over time. The only way you're going to get that is when you have, at this point, supermajorities. That pass legislation. It can't even be just a simple act of Congress, because the next guy that comes in is has a different Congress, and it gets overturned. And if you want people to make investments that have 20-year amortization schedules or 40-year amortization schedules, you are going to have to do things in such a way that the company in question is reasonably certain that there's going to be a 20-year period of time when that thing's going to be a viable alternative, right? I mean, this...
Let's not throw any logic into any of this. I mean, I didn't realize that Trump had... When did that happen? When I was watching the football game?
Which?
Trump pardoning the January 6th people?
Yeah, that was probably while you and I were watching the football game. I had a screen.
It's okay to bust into Congress and then wreck stuff.
Well, it's okay to that's not the reality, Chief. There's the other thing that Biden did on the way out the door is he pardoned everybody in the Jan. 6 committee.
All right, we can't even get through one sentence without me saying, is it okay to bust in there? And you immediately what about Biden?
No. The point being is, did they bust into... The reason I bring it up is there is evidence that the Jan. 6 committee deliberately destroyed the evidence, that they didn't bust into anything, they were let in. And you can't be arrested for trespassing if you were invited. So, now, violence is a different thing.
Would you have any idea, with your upbringing, that you belonged in there doing the stuff they were doing? Would you have gone in that door? I would not have.
If the door has...
I don't care how much it was open. I didn't belong in there.
Look, I understand that, okay, but look at how many people got arrested for burning half of Minneapolis.
I would go with commuting the sentences or something. Let's just get it all behind us. Let's start over. I'd go with that. But
Well, that I think is, for the most part, that is what he essentially did.
Okay.
Okay, and the other thing you have to realize about a pardon A pardon does not erase a conviction. There is no such thing as expungement within the federal legal system. It doesn't exist. If you are convicted of a crime, a federal offense, that conviction cannot be removed.
Well, can you vote again, and can you
Hold on a minute. So the way it works is this. You can appeal the conviction, and if you win that, it goes away. But assuming that you cannot win on appeal, or you try and you fail, the conviction is permanently on your record, period. However, there's also another entry in there that says you were pardoned. So what this means is the disabilities that would normally come with being convicted of a federal offense, i.e. you can't vote, you can't own guns, those go away. All right, because a pardon is essentially the mercy of the king. I mean, that's where it comes from.
They tried to pardon Otto Kerner, and didn't he not accept it because he said he wasn't.
Well, you could turn it down. You could turn it down. That's the point. And the reason you can turn it down is because you lose your Fifth Amendment rights because you can't be prosecuted anymore. There's no penalty that can be applied to you. The thing is this: being pardoned today, if it happens preemptively, and this was a bad precedent that was set with Nixon, all right? Ford pardoned Nixon infamously. Nixon had not been charged with anything. And unfortunately, we didn't do anything about that.
You know, we got a dash here, but another thing I hope we can get rid of this year is two wrongs don't make a right. One guy did it, so the other guy's. You know, I'm going to invite Wayne Madsen on. I got a thing from at Quora. People send all this stuff to me, and I was reading this thing, Carl, about the Nixon. I'm thinking maybe it makes sense to us when we think about it. This guy's a big long thing, and I'll send it out to you because I copied it. I'm going to try and get Wayne on because he was an expert of all that stuff. He was around during those days.
Yeah.
They claim that the thing about Nixon, out of all the stuff with the Watergate burglaries and the cover-up and all that stuff, you know what? Now I think about it, I was asking some people this weekend, even guys like John Flanagan are really into history and stuff.
Right.
Nobody really knows what they were looking for.
Right.
Because he was so far ahead in the polls.
Well, that was the thing. It didn't make any sense.
Well, now it turns out, according to this guy, that the latest thought process is that much like Reagan did to Carter, he tried to mess with the Iran situation until after the election. Evidently, in the first run, when he was real close with Humphrey, and all of a sudden Humphrey was coming on at the end, and he thought he was going to lose.
Right.
They tried to he tried to torpedo the Paris Peace Accords, and there was evidence that the Democrats had found.
And that was what they were after.
Yeah, and then according to this guy, that's what they were after, is the evidence.
That would actually make some sense, because one of the things that has never made sense to me in that time period is that he just won in a landslide, for crying out loud. And by the way, it wasn't a surprise win either. Okay? I mean, he was,
this was actually right before the election. So they thought
that's what I'm saying, is that he was so far ahead.
Yeah, but before computers, before laptops, what do you do? You want to look through all the files? You must.
Are we trying to get the paper? Yeah, to get photographs of it or steal them.
Do we have Joel, Ricky?
No, I don't see him.
Well, as soon as he pops in, we'll dash. Until then, we'll keep talking. So I'm going to have him. John said he'd love to be on as well. John's a history. Well, we all sort of are history buffs.
Yeah.
And because somebody would ask me, what were they looking for? To be honest, after all this time, I have no idea. I mean, because it would seem so odd at the time. What were they doing in there? Just being idiots or what? They probably weren't just being.
There's also an awful lot of belief that the CIA was actually the one that committed the burglary.
Well, that's probably. I don't even remember what we have Joel in the room, but real quick, did the Paris Peace Accords, did they just totally flop? I don't. We have to brush up on this before we have Wayne on.
Yeah,
because these little pieces of history are part of our collective. brain set. And, you know, and I don't like to see us walk off to do that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just, I mean, Iran Contra, I mean, that kind of stuff, I mean, that was so screwed up. You know, I don't know.
The idea that, you know, gee, well, you know, the guy on this side of the aisle, he doesn't do anything bad, and the other one does more. Yeah, that's a load of crap.
Well, we have Joel. Well, I want you to hang around.
Yes.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Oh, boy.
How about Ohio State?
Okay. I'm just happy.
Where do you guys? This is going to be an old sports segment here. So
that's fine.
Where do you want to start?
Well, I was just, the more I went through the numbers or the people, I thought from day one that Ohio State had the best roster, and when the Irish guys kept getting a guy hurt here and hurt there, I just was happy when it was 28-7 and a half. But I was just hoping it wasn't going to be like 50-7, and I guess it wasn't that. They made a comeback. They're a game team. They needed a special teams big play because their quarterback's nowhere near as good. Their guy can throw and ours can't. It's simple as that. Duh.
Interesting. I have a lot of thoughts. Number one, congratulations to the Ohio State Buckeyes. They look very impressive there. I don't know who sent the original email sending me a Wall Street Journal article. That wasn't you, Carl, was it? Is there someone named Kevin on these Cox and Jocks?
Yeah,
group?
Kevin.
Yeah, that's not me.
Kevin O'Neill.
Okay. Saying, Michigan fans are going to be unhappy no matter what.
I saw that. I have to admit,
the contrary.
Joel,
quite
the
contrary.
Joel,
and let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. Number one, if Notre Dame would have won, the entire state of Ohio and Buckeye Nation would have been in utter misery, and they would have been calling for Day to get fired and for Notre Dame to hire Marcus Freeman. Okay? Number two, Ohio State winning, losing to Michigan. I wonder how many first place votes Michigan is going to get. But the best fact is that Ohio State is already ranked number one for next year. I want Ohio State to go undefeated every single day, every single game, until the last game of the season when they come into Ann Arbor and they play an undefeated Michigan team for 1-2. I'm looking forward
to it.
That'd
be nice. Now,
I'm looking forward to that very much. So that's my perspective on the Notre Dame Ohio State game. I can't, you know, Michigan pulled it off against them. I don't know how they did it. They lit a fire under their you know what, and Alabama used to have the best talent money can buy. Now it looks like that's been shifted to Ohio State.
They have been. This is my read. They and Georgia, LSU, the teams that always that they're. Mantra was stacking their roster with recruits and having them going to junior colleges and stuff like that, which Alabama supposedly did. They used to have by far the best 50, 60-man rosters. And now they've, through the portal, anybody who's not playing there, they've lost a lot of their, you know, 40 through 60 people. And Georgia has, up until this year, they haven't taken one guy through the portal.
You told me that.
And they've been slow to slow to pay and slow to they're still doing the recruitment thing. I joust at my Notre Dame guys all the time, you know, because I just love to get them thinking a little bit sometimes, not that they don't, but when you open up, this is what was it Shakespeare? It wasn't Shakespeare, some Greek guy, you know, cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war. Once you do that, you don't know where it's going to land. This thing is going to end up with professional sponsored teams.
They're
already going there. And so,
I mean,
the people who embrace that, even though I find it disgusting, I sent out a thing to my Notre Dame buddies this weekend. I said, let's hope we win or at least don't embarrass ourselves. When I say we, I graduated there, but I'm not what you call a weir. Because this is the last time that we go to a national championship when you can even recognize what college football is.
Yep,
I mean, 5 years from now, if they're all paid players, they don't even go to school at Notre Dame, and they got a camp down the block, and same thing with Michigan. If it's a Michigan-sponsored professional team, you know, I guess I'll watch it, but I don't really give a crap anymore. It's not like I said in class.
The Michigan Coca-Cola Wolverines.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Ohio State, you know, Pepsi Buckeyes. Or yeah. Pepsi Ohio State Buckeyes. Yeah, you're eventually going to get down to four conferences and stuff. So, I mean, we've been talking about the evolution of the game. And the other thing that's important or, you know, just interesting, I mean, Will Howard, you know, turned out to be a good chance for quarterback. But just like the pros, man, you just go and they went and they found. And they found someone that fit their system, someone that can run, has, a good arm. And Ryan Day, 68-11 with four of those losses coming against Michigan. I mean, you saw the statistics on him, his winning percentage. I mean, you can't argue with the guy's record. And it's just, as I said, Michigan lit a fire under their butt, and they, they're the national champion.
All right, let me ask you a question. I've been axing this of everybody, axing.
Yes.
The NCAA, in a feeble attempt to get ahead of this, they've been behind it forever, boy, staring at the dog's ass in front of them, right? They are now considering a fifth year of eligibility. Now, I think if they don't say anything, everybody's going to get eligibility as long as they're in college. It'll be six or seven. So they better come up with something. They're trying to do the fifth. Now, does that mean Howard plays next year for Ohio State?
Well, what about that guy Jack Kaiser? He was a six-year player.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the COVID. He got hurt early enough in one year like that. Then he got the COVID. I'm talking about whoever, if they do the fifth year, they're essentially going to add a year to everybody. So it's like if Miami grabs this guy from Georgia, and he's making a bunch of dough in Miami next year.
Exactly,
he could stay another year. So you're actually getting
It's war. I'm telling you, it's war. It's war between the NFL. I mean, look at Doc Quinn Ewers. I mean, he got offered $6 million to stay at Texas.
Yeah,
and he decided to go. So it's changing things. But we would be remiss. I don't want to bait too much people with my arrogant-ass Michigan attitude, but it's just great when people, Wall Street Journal, everyone loves to hate Michigan. I mean, I love it. Everyone is just...
Well, nobody hates Michigan more than they hate Notre Dame. They hate anybody who's a winner.
But look, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about professional sports, professional football.
Well, those guys had better figure out that there is going to be a lot of people, I think, that they're going to end up being able to play college ball as long as they want to, as long as they're in school. It's not going to be just fifth year. Somebody's going to go to a judge and say, hey, I'm in a business school. Why can't I be on the football team? And then some judge is going to say, there's no reason other than a bunch of people trying to collude. Right?
Yeah, no, I'm talking, Chief. I'm talking, come on. I can't believe we haven't got to the professional.
No, what I'm saying, you're talking about who's winning. We'll get to that. But I'm saying, at some point here, there's going to be people that just play college for 6 or 7 years, make money, and go off to their careers, not even consider the NFL.
Just like the old days. Yeah. I just got to tell you this one quick story, and then we got to talk NFL. My grandfather was a surgeon in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he was an orthopedic surgeon. And he used to do surgery on a lot of the Green Bay Packers. And one of the Packers that he used to do knee surgery on was a guy named Buckets Goldenberg. Have you ever heard of Buckets Goldenberg?
No.
And so he played for a while, and for the Packers, he took care of him. And my grandfather had a conversation with him, and you can imagine, I'm 61, so you can imagine how long ago this was. And my grandfather said, you talk about all these different college teams that you played for. How many years did you play in college? And I'm not sure exactly what Buckets said. I think it was like 7 or 8. And he said, well, how did they let you play that? Or why did you leave college? He goes, well, a referee came up to me in my 7th year and said, Buckets, I don't want to see you around next year. So this is nothing new. This is nothing new that's going on. But we only got 2 minutes here. My Lions went down.
Yeah.
My Lions went down. And I guess, obviously you could say turnovers, injuries, or whatever. What I think, and people in Chicagoland are not going to want to hear this, but I think Ben Johnson, your new coach, got a little bit too cute. And I think the Lions got a little bit too cute and a little bit too tricky. and they didn't play smash mouth football. They didn't run Jahmyr Gibbs enough. I like Ben Johnson. I'm not going to not. The guy was incredible offensive coordinator here. Yeah, I'm sad he's gone, but I'm just telling people in Chicagoland here that he's a trickster. And I know you got Caleb Williams. You should have taken Jaden Daniels. I said that the whole time. I'm not glad he's gone. I just don't think you guys got.
Well, they always go for the whoever the hot coordinator is, and they've been disappointed. This will be the third time in a row. Probably. It's always the same game.
Yeah.
So how would you like to be the tight end on the Ravens?
He fumbled,
then he dropped a 2-point conversion.
I know. Watch those games, and it looks tough. KC looks tough. Is it finally Buffalo's time? Jaden Daniels, upstart. I mean, going on the road. In KC, it just looks like it's going to be interesting to see who comes out of the NFC. But boy, I tell you, I don't know. Like, I just kind of, you know how you just kind of get these spiny feelings? And I just, not that I'm a Buffalo fan, but I just kind of think they might finally break that curse.
I think they might too. You know, what's interesting is, you know, everybody's a sports, right? Everybody's an expert. We're an expert on everything these days. Everybody is. And it's funny to me how, you know, Travis Kelce's got the great girlfriend. How many times has she and what's her name hugged during a game? About 100?
You know what? I've been interested. I watched Lions game. Chief, you know I'm just a Michigan fan. Yeah. It's 7:45. I hope people are not too upset by my Michigan rant.
No problem.
I can't wait. It's either going to be it's going to be Ohio State number one, Michigan number two, next November, Thanksgiving weekend, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well,
go Blue.
One last comment though about this football.
Okay.
You look at the Bears. You know, you look at the quarterback,
Bears.
And you look at the guy in Texas. The guy got clobbered almost as much as Caleb Williams. Their offensive line's as bad as the Bears. Their defense is otherworldly. I mean, they got so many good guys on that defense. But you look at this Travis Kelce, and he's a great ball player. Every time they need the guy to do something, he does it. But he's in the pattern all the time. He's the tight end. The guy in the Bears, what the hell's his name? He's a really good tight end, too. He didn't get anywhere near as many touches this year as last year because he's blocking every play because they got no line.
Yeah. Andy Reid, seven straight, AFC championships. I mean, that is just unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, folks, mark your date. November 29th is that game I'm talking about. So we're going to talk Michigan basketball next time we're coming
out. All right,
on.
Bud, no problem.
We're looking good. And everybody out there, go Blue. Be back next week.
Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
How you doing, buddy? Did you watch football weekend, or did you watch Trump sign stuff, or are you watching the markets? What are you doing?
I did not get a chance to watch much football this weekend. I was not feeling well. I had my thing on Friday. It kind of laid me out for the weekend, and then I was down to see my parents, all that kind of stuff, just doing family stuff.
You sound pretty good today. You sound good today.
Yeah, because I had a long weekend to recover, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I kind of out Friday into Saturday, so I wasn't feeling well at all.
All right, well, the parents are good, everything's good.
Everyone's good. Yeah. My brother came down and visited, and I haven't seen him in a while, and, it's just one of those things.
So the parents still like you. That's positive.
Well, you're assuming that's correct.
Well, yeah, the Italian families stay together no matter what, it seems. It's a good group. What do you make of all this? We've run up into this. We've got, we seem to have, people wanting to lower interest rates, but I don't know how they're going to do that with the deficit that's there.
I don't think we're going to get lower interest rates. You and I have been talking about this. I think we get no rate cuts, and actually the risk is to the upside, I think, we could see a tick up in rates, which would really, put the Fed in a bad position because they've been telling everybody how rates are going to go lower, rates are going to go lower, rates are going to go lower, everything's okay, and then suddenly, rates stay flat, if not go up. That would be kind of a disaster for them,
Just in terms of risk, this is not, it seems to me that if you go back, and I've mentioned this before, every time in the last 30 years of my lifetime that somebody has had both Congress on their side, the infighting among the party, Democrat or Republican, makes it so they almost don't do near as much as when they're fighting each other. Is this unity going to hang in there? I don't know how much time he has because he's promised people so much. There's people who are convinced that prices are going down this week. Oil prices are going down. Oil prices aren't that high. I wouldn't necessarily put that public enemy number one here. Plus, if you somehow found a way to get oil prices down, what's that going to do to your production? Then you go the other way. Or what am I missing?
Well, it's interesting because the oil names were all higher in the pre-market this morning, like Exxon and Chevron. Not substantially, but they were higher. They weren't lower, which is what you thought might be the case, right? But he made it very clear, that there's this energy emergency, and the emergency is really around the demand from AI and quantum computing and all that stuff. And we all know, because we've been talking about it, the demand that puts on the grid and on the system, and why fossil fuels are going to have to continue to power the world, because wind and solar are just not going to make it at the moment, right? So I think that was the positive. I think that's what you have to kind of focus on, is you have to recognize that, the demands are changing, not because, we're driving more cars or any of that stuff, or we're driving, it's because of the other technology now that's creating massive demand. And so you got to deal with it one way or the other. You got to make energy in order to power that.
Well, I don't think there's any, everybody, I think, except some of the Democrats, because I can lambaste them as much as when you're in the middle, you can do all kinds of stuff. You can lambaste both sides. But I've not been able to figure out, what's his stance on nuclear?
I don't know who Trump's stance on nuclear. No, my guess would be that he would be pro-nuclear.
I would, right? Too. I mean, there are a few of these smaller reactors going up places, aren't there?
There are reactors starting to go up. And you saw that, who was it, Google and Microsoft bought that, Three Mile Island, and they're going to start to recreate a nuclear facility there. That happened. When did that happen? Four or five months
ago? Yeah, the one had the problem. That's not coming back, but there's a couple other there. And somebody is restarting the one in Michigan across from Milwaukee.
Correct. So I think the truth is, I think the fact is that nuclear would be, if you want my opinion, he'd be pro-nuclear.
Yeah, well, I would hope so. I mean, I actually, I'm not a fan of the style, let's put it that way, but out of all those executive orders, I agree with a lot of them. I mean, it's not like, that I don't agree with a lot of the policies. I really do. We all know we have too much regulation. When we start doing stuff like, renaming gulfs, so if I got a map, I got to go change it.
Does that really make sense? You're going to name it the Gulf of America? Come on. That's what I think is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let's stay away from that. I mean, let's
go. Go there.
I mean,
dumb, right? I mean, that's just dumb.
Yeah.
Although I have to tell you, the whole Panama Canal thing might have more legs to it, right? Jimmy Carter gave it away for a dollar. And that if, in fact, the Chinese are controlling it, and I don't know if that's true or not. He says it is. I have no idea if it is or not. But if the Chinese are now controlling the Panama Canal and we're getting penalized as a result, then I think, you have to have a conversation around that, too.
Well, I mean, the what is happening, I mean, Carl's mentioned some of this, but I've also been reading on this because I don't know why I'm all that interested in it, but I am. The Chinese have been making serious inroads into the country of Panama, like they're doing to other places.
Correct.
And I think they're actually teaching Chinese in a lot of the schools down there.
They probably are, because that's how they infiltrate, right?
And when we left, we said we're supposed to be getting a little bit of a good rate for ships to go through there. We're always going to have the ability to send our stuff through, and whatever it is, I think the tolls have been raised some. Well, we raise the price of everything here too. I mean, I don't know how you decide one guy's wrong and the other guy's right, but the Chinese are making serious inroads into, like they are other places. I think they're investing in roads and investing in stuff. It's the something or Silk Road agenda or whatever, and now we're sort of jealous. But I don't know, is there doing something we're not doing? I mean, I don't know. Or did we pull out and they moved in? I mean, We need somebody, I guess, that could tell us more about that. But there's kind of more than this that beats the eye. But that doesn't mean you're going to show up with troops. It's not like they haven't let one of our ships through. I mean, it's clear.
No. They've let them through. But if I understand what he says, he said that, you know, we're paying double the rate, and we're getting, you know, we're not getting the service we're supposed to be getting. I'm not really sure what that means. All I'm doing is listening to what he's saying, and if that's true, then that needs to be addressed, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, what percentage of what he says is true?
Well, I understand that. That's exactly where we're at, right? You have to figure out, is it right? Is it wrong? Is it true? What are the Chinese really taking control of it? And if they are, what's that about?
Well, I mean, if they're just doing stuff that we're not doing. I mean, if they're lending those guys money to build a road and we're not, how much can you pitch the Chinese?
Well, you can't. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You have to actually find out what's going on, right?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, if all of a sudden they're going back on the treaty that I have no problem. And, you know, and part of that's his style. You know, he's going to come in and invade, and it's not my style, but it's a style. It's a New York sort of style. You know, right. He's going to come in and you want $500,000 for your condo, and he's going to come in and threaten to kill you and your kids. And then when you walk out, the little nerd next to him says he really means he's 475 bid. Well, you know, that's not my style, but it's his.
Right.
And it can be effective. I mean, let's hope it is. I mean, but yeah, I mean, if all of a sudden they've doubled the tolls on what they said they were going to, you know, we were supposed to pay. Of course, then again, we're the ones that inflated the world, but that's another story.
Well, okay, I hear you.
Yeah.
That, which is why, you know, it's not simple, right? It's complicated. So you have to, that's why I'm saying, all I'm saying is you have to actually go figure out, is what are we doing? Is that really happening or not happening?
You know what the tolls are? Have you ever looked to see what the tolls are?
No, I have not.
I have not done much in the Panama, so I won't say I'm an expert on that, because I'm not. But I was digging through how much it is for the the Suez Canal. It's like $250,000.
Yeah, I assumed it was fairly expensive.
Yeah, but if you got a container, a big container ship, it could be $300,000.
Yeah.
Well, that's a number, especially when they don't have any locks over there or anything.
Yeah, that's a big number. That's what I'm saying. You know, if the U.S. is paying double the rate, is that what he suggested?
Well, no, we're supposed to get a discount. But
we're supposed to get a discount.
I'm sure their rates have gone up in the last 10 years, for God's sake. The whole world has doubled.
Well, okay, that's true. But so then, is our rate, even our rate may have doubled, but is that a discount to what everyone else is paying?
That's what I'm guessing it still is, but there's probably not an index or something. You know, who knows how much they're supposed to raise? It's probably way more than the day we gave it to them, I would guess.
Yeah.
But I don't think we negotiate a rate that says for the next 100 years our rate can never go up. Maybe we did.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what Jimmy Carter did when he gave it away, you know?
Well, I mean, it's... Yeah, you know, when you say gave it, I don't know. I mean, who paid for the second one? Because if they've had it, there's now two canals there, right?
I don't know what's there.
Well, no, there's definitely another whole... I won't say another whole canal, because they have to build another lake or any of those other things. But there's a duplicate set of locks that's a lot bigger than the old one that I think just got completed a couple of years ago. I'm gonna do some research on this for next Tuesday, Kenny. But
yeah, I don't know.
You know, but there's definitely a duplicate canal that can handle bigger ships. I have no idea who paid for that. Now, if they borrowed all that money from the Chinese and not us, yeah. But I better do some research.
Okay, well, that's true. That's what I'm saying. Is I don't know the whole story. All I know is what I'm hearing. And if what I'm hearing is that we built the canal that Jimmy Carter sold for a buck, and then we're getting screwed because the Chinese are now controlling it, that's one story. But to your point, if the Chinese built a second canal and used their money to build it, well, that's that now changes the narrative, right?
Yeah, you know, we'll have a segment on this during the week. I mean, Carl Alou or somebody will know all about this. And yeah, because I know there was a massive amount of in the last 15 years. They essentially have built a second set of locks.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
And now the issue is water, because they've had such a drought. The lake, because all the water has to come from the top. It takes an incredible amount of water to send a ship through there.
Yeah, right. Because they have to fill each one of those locks.
Yeah.
Every boat moves in, they got to fill it or you know, or drain it, however they're trying to get the ship through, right?
And then the highest point is that lake in the middle that somehow we constructed as part of the system. If that lake is dry, you got trouble.
Right.
That's where the water comes from. We'll do a thing. It'll be fun because I love looking at the stuff like this. Actually, maybe we'll have my buddy Bill Moriarty come out and talk about it. You know, he's a civil engineer. We'll make him do some work. Well, Kenny, I don't see where we get the huge push in the market here. I mean, we're backed into a corner in terms of there's no way the guy can lower taxes, I don't think.
If he keeps them where they are, the tax cuts that he put into place that are about to expire, right? Beyond that, do I think he can lower capital gains to, he wants to go to 15% or something, or to corporate tax? I don't think that happens, but I do think he gets the current rates held where they are. They're not going to go up, right? I think that's the most important thing, because if those rates go up, the whole country is going to take a hit. So I think he's got to get those rates to at least hold steady. Whether or not he's able to get, you know, rate reductions is another conversation. And you're right. I agree with you. I'm not sure how he's going to push that through. So we'll see. And so to your point, I'm not really sure where the market finds direction. I know right now futures were higher this morning, kind of, you know, on the excitement that, you know, he's in there. He made all these executive orders yesterday. He's doing what he said. He's fulfilling his promises. And so the initial reaction is one of euphoria. But look, it's a long road. And so we'll see how it plays out over the next, you know, weeks and months.
I know your favorite stock, Apple's been getting its ass kicked. What's going on there? Is that a China situation, or is that just a not selling a phone situation?
No, well, so Jefferies just downgraded it this morning as well. There's another one, right? They downgraded it because weak China sales. I think they said China iPhone sales were down 18%. Okay, that's fine. So Apple is down, I think it's down 8 or 9%. Still within the normal trading range, right? If it goes down 10% or more, then we get in correction territory. But that's where I think then you buy Apple, right? When it declines and it's in correction territory, it's on sale. I don't think Apple's going anywhere. They're going to make $100 billion, if not more, this quarter. They do that four times a year. Think about it. $100 billion
that's
in 3 months.
It's a lot of dough.
So it's almost ridiculous to me. They go, oh, we're cutting our Apple. Okay, great. You cut the Apple. Whatever. I like Apple. I'm never selling my Apple. If it goes into correction territory, I'll buy more.
When does the situation, when, you know, the phones, everybody's got to have them, you know, type of thing. But when does the stuff we talk about elsewhere, you know, somebody, tell you were talking about your wife's car. One of my these judge guys I meet once in a while. I learn a lot from these dudes, but one of the guys said, he goes, I think I might have just rubbed the lady's car next to me. And I didn't know if I did or I didn't. I get out and I look, and there's this little scratch on the painted bumper.
Yeah.
He goes, it's not a bumper anymore. Where if you nudge it, it wouldn't make any difference. He goes, he's one of these true honest men. Lady comes, he waits for her to come out and says, by the way, take a look at your bumper. Is there anything there that you haven't seen before? And she looks and says, well, I don't think the scratch was here. And he goes, I must have done it. I'll tell you what. You get it fixed. Guess how much, Kenny?
I'm afraid to even guess because I think it's ridiculous.
$1,500.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And you know, but when does these shocks that are happening to people, the credit card stuff, when does it reach the point where the kid doesn't get the $1,000 Apple phone? We've got to be getting close. I mean, who the hell in China can afford these things?
Well, I don't know. Is it you don't get the Apple phone, or you just keep your phone? You know, there's a bunch of Apple cultists out there, right?
Every product,
they can't wait to go out and be the first one to get the new product. And there's a lot of them, apparently. I don't do that. I still have an old phone. I got an Apple 13 or 14 or something, right? I don't have the latest phone. I didn't run right out and get it. It's fine. My phone works fine. No problem. But to your point, I don't know who's paying, you know, $1,500 for an Apple phone. I know here, you know, when you go to buy it at Verizon, you can certainly buy it outright, or they'll just finance it. You know, they throw $20 a month on your bill for the next 6 years, right? So it's easy to digest. At some point, though, that's going to become a problem. But when is that point? I don't know.
What is the implied interest rate on that? They must tell you.
You know, something that's interesting you say that. I don't know. I'm sure it's plus 30%. I'm sure. Right?
Yeah. Well, they should add that to the credit card bills.
Yeah, right. Yeah, 100%. But that would be, you know what? That's a very interesting question. I wonder what Verizon charges you when they do that. Right? We should find out. We should find out.
Well, you know, if you're paying 20 for that, and I guess you're sort of used to it, whatever that means. Every time you walk down the block, somebody reaches out and kicks you in the ass. He does it every morning. I guess you get used to it, right? You don't really like it, but you're used to it. If you're paying for the old one, as soon as the old one comes off, you go out and get the new one. It's the same thing. You're right back where you started from.
Yeah, right. 100%.
I mean, it's not exactly your and my mentality.
We should either Google it or go to ChatGPT and ask them what the implied interest rate that Verizon charges you.
Well, you know, sometimes happiness... I'll keep this brief. When my first job was with Allied Van Lines, right, and I wasn't moving furniture, but they had a lot of small places around the country that made the unit. You know, they there was an Allied Van Lines in every town in the country. Well, if one was in bad shape, my love was always small businesses. So they would send me out as a consultant, and I'd work with guys for a few days and try and help them out in their place. And you learned a boatload, in small businesses. And the ladies in the office, they go out and get a new car, right? They get a raise. They bring the old jalopy in, and they look at the new one. And the guy would, they come out with the new car. And they'd say, basically, I'm making $100 more a month. I need a new car. And the guy, first thing the guy says is, how much you paying on the old car? And this is a long time ago. They'd say, $100. How much can you afford now? $125. 150 with the raise. And I love this car. If I can get you this car for 150 a month, will you do it? Absolutely. So they come home, they love the new car, and I'm saying, hey, it's really neat. I'm trying to be nice. And I start being stupid like myself, and I go, by the way, how much you pay for it? I have no idea. How much you get your old one? How much did they give you for the old one? I have no idea. But it's $50 more. They can afford it. They got the raise. It's a lot nicer than the old jalopy, and they're happy. And even I just shut up at that stage. I mean, they're happy. You're happy with your phone. It's $20. You're paying it. You like it. Good for you.
That's 100%.
That's where you and I would be dumb enough to ask the question, by the way, what is that interest rate? What? What do you mean, what interest rate? That's the world we live in now. You don't want to ask these questions. All you do is make enemies.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Now I'm curious. Now I have to go back and find out how they make that work and is there an implied interest rate, or are they really just giving it to you at they're breaking down the $1,500 payment by 62 months and just telling you here's what the number is with no interest? I don't know what the answer is. I got to ask.
Well, if their cost on the thing is $750, then look at what's the interest rate on that. I mean,
but then the implied interest rate. That's right. Right, would be 50%, right? Because if it's $750 and it's $1,500.
What happens if you change in the middle and you still owe half?
So here's what you have to do. You have to go in there and you pay off what you owe, and then you trade it in. So they'll give you, then if you trade it in, they'll take a trade in and discount the new phone by whatever they give you for the trade in. But you have to pay it off first before you can just trade it in.
Okay. Now, Kevin says that they'll lock you into 3 years of service, and their marginal cost of service is zero. So that's part of the interest.
Yeah, okay. So there you go.
Yeah.
Right,
so okay. Let's say we have I hope we have a pretty decent year. I really don't want to see it crash. I don't know. I don't necessarily want to see it go up another 20% either, because if we get too high, then it that's not good either. But I think maybe we can grow into this. Maybe some of these programs that Trump's putting through actually might help. I think some of them make sense. I really do. So
some of them do make sense. But I'm not necessarily sure it's going to be, it's going to be all wine and roses getting there.
No.
I do think we're going to hit some potholes along the way. So all this euphoria that, the market can only go up, I think that's when, people get drawn into this, that fear of missing out. Oh, my God, I got to get in, I got to get in. And then when it corrects, everyone says, oh, the market's rigged. Oh, they did this. No. You just weren't paying attention.
Can we hope that 4 years from now you and I are doing this and we're both healthy and, we don't get a Democrat in and the first thing he does on his first day is sign 200 executive orders? Yeah. This is not really this is not my style of government, but anyway.
No, it's not mine either. I got news for you.
All right, Kenny, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 23, NASDAQ Futures up 102. Do we have Professor Hal?
Yes, we do.
Hal, are you there?
I'm here.
You been listening in, bud?
I got up a little early. The new house, the furnace is, it keeps tripping off. And so yesterday I changed the filters out, and it's still tripping off. Fortunately, when we bought it, the builder has a one-year warranty, so the furnace guy's going to come over. Right now I'm in my sweats and jacket trying to keep warm.
Well, that's good. You know, a lot of times you think clearer when it's cooler sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm from Idaho, and, you know, we call this winter in North Carolina. We call that barbecue weather.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, Carl was mentioning earlier, I mean, in Chicago, I mean, we're 5 below this morning. Okay, well, that's...
Wow.
It's not great.
Is that wind chill? Is that...
No, that's real temperature today.
Yeah, wow.
But, I mean, that's not great, but, I mean, it's... You know, every year when I was growing up, we had a couple of, you know, 10, 15 degree below zero days. And yeah. You know, if we have two of these days and it's back to 20, you know, 20 and 30 the rest of the month, you can deal with that. I mean,
the problem is when it snows like 2 feet, man.
Oh, that's, yeah, well, then you got issues. But yeah. Carl was saying that the huge amount of parts of the country that are cold. I mean,
yeah.
It's zero in Indianapolis. It's, you know, one of my buddies called me during the game last night and he said it's, you know, it's 5 in Nashville or something. I mean, yeah. it's going really south. I mean, it's, what did Carl say, the average temperature this morning countrywide was 15 or something?
Well, yeah, this really cold temperature is really dry, and it's pushing the moisture down to the south. And we have no threat of snow here, but apparently there's a high risk of snow in, like, Alabama and Mississippi. It's crazy. Well,
they're all signed up for it. No snow shovels, no anything.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, down here in North Carolina, you get an eighth of an inch of snow on the ground, everything closes because there's no way they can combat it.
And nobody knows how to drive it in it.
Yeah. My kids are loving it. I'm like thinking, my goodness, man, in Idaho, it could snow a foot and we'd still go to school.
We never had a day off in grammar school.
I mean, I remember my cousin Adam, when I was in the Navy, I'd be hanging out at my uncle's house because I was stationed out of Falls, Idaho at the INEL. And we had the number 3 engine room out there, the Enterprise, and I was an instructor of nuclear power plant mechanical operations. And I'd be hanging out at my uncle's house, and my cousin Adam, who's one of my best friends now, he's like 8 years younger than me, his three kids. And in high school, he would jump on a snow machine and go to school with, you know, 6 inches of snow on the ground.
Well, yeah.
And I think he was wearing shorts.
Well, sure, yeah, everybody's into the shorts look now. I'll go to the
Meyer. Yeah, in winter in Idaho, man, you know, you go to the store in shorts, you might be wearing your Crocs.
Oh, God. Well, the only time we were off the whole way through was the blizzard of 67. In high school, we had 2 days off because the buses didn't run.
How much did it snow then?
It was 20, I'm going to say we had 24 or 27 inches with wind and drifts. So wow. In some areas... If you were set up right, you could sled off your garage roof because the drift was so high. I mean, they were just abandoning buses in the middle of the street.
Chicago's not really prone to snow effect because the storms move from west to east, right?
Well, we don't get the lake effect stuff like the other side of the lake, but we've had some tough ones here, and you've got a lot of people the parking and. If it ever piles up enough to where it's here for a week or two, there's no place to put it. You know, but usually it doesn't last all that long. You get a melt, you know, after a couple of days, you get some kind of a melt. But if it doesn't, like, you know, that's what got, what's his name, Jane Byrne in office, for God's sake. Because it didn't melt.
Well, you know, when I was in the Navy, I was at nuclear power school back in the late 90s, or late 80s, sorry. And it snowed in Orlando. It was like 31 degrees, and it was causing all kinds of havoc. I flew to Spokane, Washington, and for the entire time I was on leave during Christmas, it didn't snow at all until the day I had to go to the airport in Spokane, Washington. And I'm living down in Lewiston, and my brother Rod drives me up to Spokane, and this is what you do when you grow up around snow and ice. We had to drive 55 miles an hour to get me there on time because we didn't expect it to snow, but it snowed that last day. He was fantailing all the way from Pullman, Washington to Spokane, Washington. And what that means is when you're fantailing, you're driving kind of like you're counter steering.
Yeah.
And as your back end slides to the left, you counter steer. He was fantailing all the way to the Spokane airport, and we drove 55 miles an hour in fresh snow.
Well, you
can't
learn
do that in the South.
We used to go skiing every year, so I drove in all kinds of crazy mountain weather. As a matter of fact, one day I was driving Maddie Weber in, and we get off the expressway and turn onto the street, and it was like, you know, black glare ice.
Yeah.
And in the back end went out, and I immediately, you know, panicked, steered in that direction, and, you know, immediately got control of the car. And then he goes, "Where the hell did you learn how to do that?" I said, "Well, that's what you're supposed to do. You turn into the skid. If you're skidding fast, you turn fast. I mean, it's otherwise, you've got to gain control of the thing. Otherwise,
In Oregon along the Columbia River, man, they're famous for, you know, in the South they're famous for their mud.
Oh yeah.
Along the gorge in Oregon, along the Columbia River, we're famous for black ice. And what we would do for fun in high school is we go to the shopping mall, and the black ice would be just thicker than thick and slicker than slick, and we would do cookies, 720s, on that ice all night from like midnight to 2 a.m. It was a lot of fun.
Well,
hey, I got to interrupt you.
You get really good at doing it.
Yeah, hey, I need to jump in because I got to help Hal out here.
Yeah.
So. Two things. Yeah, when you talk about going to the parking lots, yeah, when my kids were learning to drive, I took them their first winter snow.
Yeah.
So that they could learn how to handle that. But regarding your furnace, I had a similar problem. And it turns out that I thought I was buying a really good higher-end furnace filter.
Uh-huh.
And the guy came in and said, "No, that's too much. You're making your furnace work too hard to pull the air through, and it's shutting down."
Ah.
So take a look at the MERV. It's on your filter. It's called the MERV rating.
Uh-huh.
And if you have a high number, like a 14 or something like that, swap in 8 and see if that fixes your problem.
Okay, cool.
All right, I'm going to go away now.
Okay. He's furnace repairman.
No, I just learned it the hard way because I don't know damn thing about this stuff.
In North Carolina, in New York, you know, you don't have central air. You used to have radiators. So I got really good at that, but I haven't had central air since Utah. So I'm a little rusty in that regard.
God. Well, we got the window, you know, the window units are so cheap and effective. It's, you know, it's almost like,
the interesting thing about radiator heat is that the air doesn't circulate, and it doesn't circulate like the things that people cough up. And I found it really interesting that the radiator heat is kind of like a massaging kind of heat. And, you know, I didn't get very sick when I was in New York with the radiator heat. But when you have that central air pushing the air, circulating the air, and it's winter and you have the windows closed, I think it might be associated with if one person gets sick, then everybody's going to get kind of sick, right? But,
yeah, but I think
that's not the case in New York.
You New York guys have the apartment steam heat.
Yeah, yeah, the steam heat.
Well, in Chicago, the houses had hot water heat.
Well, those are two pipe systems, right?
Yeah, no, that's like the best heat in the world.
Yeah, the two pipe systems.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's always warm and it's not drafty and it's not on and off. It's always, it's great. But the problem is you have to have central air on top of it, which is
the steam boilers. You got to it's a lot of work to kind of balance that heat out. Because, you know, if air can't get out of the radiator, steam can't get in the radiator and warm up the place. And if the air's escaping too fast, it gets way too hot. And a lot of places in New York, in the 1920s, 1917s, around the Spanish flu, what was the trendy thing to do back then when coal was really cheap? Big rich people would put these big, massive radiators under windows. And then during the winter, they would pour all that heat into the room, and then they'd open the window, and that way they got some natural circulation and fresh air into the house. But today, you can't do that, you know, because it's really expensive.
If the school,
and these rooms can get really hot.
The school we were talking about, Notre Dame, they had when they built the place, they've been very good on efficiency, right? These dorms and all these businesses. They were all centrally heated from the power plant. They had a coal-fired power plant, believe it or not, and the shortest railroad in the country was the Notre Dame and Northwestern. Notre Dame is like 6 miles from, maybe even 4 miles from the main line of the Pennsylvania, up the run through Niles, Michigan. So they would run up there. They had the trackage, grab 4 or 5 things of coal, come down, and burn the coal for a few days. They go do it again. Well, yeah. underneath the quad, you'd see a spot where everything was all snow, and there'd be a spot where it was all melted. There actually was a steam tunnel. And the steam tunnel, the steam would run into all the dorms, and your first thing you did was turn the radiator off. If you had 4 rooms, you had 1 radiator on, that was plenty, and the windows would be open. The things were so friggin' hot. I mean, you'd burn your ass on those things. That's the nice thing about a hot water heat. They don't get that hot. Yeah. You can sit on them. With the steam. But I don't think we ever had the heat on ever in the 4 years I was in the dorm.
One thing you do with the steam heater, a steam radiator, is you can put a wool blanket over the radiator and you can use it to regulate the heat in the room. Balance it out.
Well, otherwise you got to open the window.
Yeah, and you don't want to open the window. I mean, if you're not paying for it, then you open the window, right? But if you're paying for it, you can put a cotton or we use cotton sheets and wool blankets to regulate the heat in my mother-in-law's house, which is, it was probably built in the 1880s. I mean, the trees alone are like 3 feet in diameter. So, I mean, the trees were probably planted before pavement. It was probably cobblestones when they put those trees.
Yeah, my senior year, I was a resident assistant, right? So I'm supposed to be in charge of, a group of knuckleheads. Well, they give me my buddies as the group I'm in charge of.
Oh, man.
which I'm like, you're not really doing that, are you? You're the only guy that can sort of control them. Okay.
Well, if you're 6'4" and 250, you probably do it.
Well, I wasn't 250 back then. How
big were you? 250?
No, God, no. In those days, I was 205.
Were you more like Manute Bol?
No, but I was a basketball player. I wasn't. How's this for heat? My guys lived over the chapel in what was known as the chapel wing, right? So there were 6 rooms above the chapel on the 3rd floor. Then below it was, 3-story chapel, right? 2-story. And so let's just say that once in a while somebody had some smoke up there.
Did they have to mask it with incense?
There were 6 windows. There were 6 windows that were open with fans pointing out.
Well, it was the 60s, right?
All winter long. So at the end of the year, you could have scraped the windows and the screens and smoked that pretty much. So the group after us, they were much more conservative in things. One of the guys, Craig Fowler, still a friend. He's an attorney, Mr. Strait, nice, terrific guy. His dad's walking across campus. He goes, "Hey, Craig, why do those guys have all those fans pointing out when it's like 2 degrees? Dad, you have no idea how much those guys study. That's why they want it nice and cool up there.
Well, it is a Catholic university, so incense is used for 2 reasons.
Right? Yeah.
One, to mask a certain kind of adult pleasure stick.
Yeah.
And the other is for Catholic mass, right?
And I'm not going to say that maybe a couple of the guests on the show might have lived in that section, but I won't. I would never even allude to something like that. But it was...
They weren't holding Catholic mass. Let's just say that.
But plus the idiots had a band above, and they would play the drums when the guy's trying to do mass downstairs. And I get the call. Can you tell your idiots to lay off the drums till after mass? And come on, guys, what are you doing?
There's an episode of South Park where Cartman hates hippies, and I guess all these drum circles pop up in South Park in the attics of everybody's house. God. Cartman goes on a rampage to get rid of them.
Well, but then some of the other RAs would come up once in a while and try and make rules. I go, guys, this is my floor. Get out of here. Go back to your own floor. That wasn't exactly what we were supposed to do, Hal, but, sometimes when in Rome. Anyway, what are we going to do about investments? What are we going to do about these interest rates? The 10-year's down a little bit today. The 30-year, which was nudging 5, is down to 4.799, call it 4.8. I don't see if these guys are they going to stop putting money into the system? How do you stop putting money into the system if you want the rates to go down? Because Trump is saying he wants them to go down. But if you put money in the system, I did this thing and I was hanging on to it for you. because you like to look at this stuff. In the last, since August of 2024, when the Fed started lowering their rates, right? So last year, we're gone from 5.35, say, in the near-term rates to 4.48. So that's 3/4-point cuts, right? Meantime, the 10-year has gone from 3.9 to 4.6, which is kind of exactly what you and I have been predicting. I mean, this is these principles, even if they, you know, if you can mess with them for a long time, they always come back to roost. Fact is, the Fed, through the open market window and through, like, the other stuff they do, reserve requirements and things, they can control short-term rates a little bit. They can control the amount of money in the system. They can control the real rate of interest. They can't control people's perception on inflation and how much they charge other people to make up for the inflation. So they really don't control long-term rates unless they're willing to do what they did during the COVID and just go out and buy all the long-term paper, which is unprecedented.
I agree with that, because the more money they print, the more inflation they create, which ends up being required by an investor. They need that protection from inflation, so the investor is not going to buy that bond, you know, that's 5 years out if they don't have this inflation premium. So I think they kind of push interest rates up. They're higher than they would have been otherwise because of the inflation.
Right.
But what I'm looking at is a chart that I created about 2 or 3 months ago. It has all the market yields from the 1 year, from the 1 month to the 20-year, and the effective federal funds rate. And what I'm seeing now is there was a dramatic move upward up until last Tuesday. On Wednesday, it looks like everything's headed down.
Well, that's the CPI report, which I think is short term, shall we say.
Yeah. So I think what's going on here is either investors believe there's going to be substantial increase in supply with rollbacks of federal regulations and rules, or I think they're believing maybe it's a mixture of both. There's going to be a rollback, and supply can be boosted relative to where it is today, which is deflationary, or recession's around the corner. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure which one it is.
Well, there's a few things that are you know, really have me concerned. One is the amount of receipts is down to the federal government taxes. Yeah. Not as bad as it was. Yeah. We had a big catch-up last month. Federal budget deficit is 40% higher than it was last year after 3 months.
Yeah, that's really scary there. I don't know what we're going to do about that.
But we've got the European Central Bank has now got a money supply growth as of last month of 9.5% a year.
Wow.
So yeah. we're 6.8.
Yeah.
And now we're getting these numbers a month in arrears because they don't want to tell us, right?
They're not transparent.
Did any of those executive...
Imagine that. Government's not very transparent.
Well, did any of those executive orders that Trump signed say we're going to go back to getting weekly money supply numbers? I don't think so.
Yeah, that'd be nice if we got that executive order.
Yeah.
You got to admit, though, he was entertaining yesterday. I mean, he's on stage signing executive orders. He had his little desk there on the left, and he's signing executive orders. I mean, he was signing executive orders.
Let's just say that's not my style.
I know, but you got to admit, it was fun to kind of watch. I mean,
right.
Entertainment.
But is that what you're supposed to be doing?
No, that's the problem with democracy, right? That's the problem with democracy. And I think what we've done over the last 150 years, we've eroded the little art republic. And we have what we would consider like a democracy. And California has that. And it doesn't work out very well. The voters, it's more of a democracy in California than a republic, because the voters can make law, right? And if the mob moves right, the laws change. If the mob moves left, the laws change. And democracy doesn't work because the mob can make Kentucky Fried Chicken illegal, but not do anything to like Bojangles chicken, right? So that's the problem with democracy, and that's the problem we have right now. Is the next president, this president, you know, given what Biden did yesterday, with all those preemptive pardons, the next president is going to, you know, maybe the next president says all Republicans are hereby pardoned from future prosecution by progressive Democrats. I mean, that's the precedent that was set yesterday. So we're living in a democracy, and it's really difficult, like what Carl was saying, for businesses to plan 20 years ahead, because every 4 years you're going to get a massive change in the laws that the government's going to enforce. So I'm not very optimistic about the future, honestly, right now.
I'm not either.
Because, yeah, to me, you know, the way these executives are rolled out by the Democrats and Republicans and the Democrats and Republicans, it's really swaying the law, and it's really hard for people to figure out where we're going to be at in 5 years. They can't really plan.
Well, we're becoming a reflection of ourselves. Everything yeah. has to be entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, think about what Trump was doing yesterday. It was the complete opposite of what we saw under Biden. Biden was sleeping at the beach. He would never take any questions. As soon as he made a statement, he walked out of the room. Yesterday, in the Oval Office, before the evening balls, he signed an executive orders, and the press is in the Oval Office, and he's riffing off the cuff for an hour with the press.
Well, he considers himself
the complete opposite.
He's, you know, he's an entertainer. He's a two-bit
he's a Kearney huckster.
He's a Kearney huckster, but yeah. you know, which as long as he does a good job, I guess I don't care. It's just it's not my style. It's not Churchill. Yeah. It's not Roosevelt.
Well, I think the California thing's going to really hamper his ability to get the deficit under control. I mean, we're talking probably $500 billion when it's all said and done, and they're going to give is the federal government going to give Gavin Newsom a $500 blank check to do whatever he wants with it? I think that would create the biggest moral hazard of all time. Because if you just give him a blank check, they're going to continue managing the forest and the shrubs as they've been doing for the last 8 years. So I think you have to put conditions on it.
Well, on top of everything else, I mean, it's stunning to me that I get around a little bit, maybe not as much as most, but the amount of people that are absolutely an expert on everything in California, and it's the three or four things. Well, geez, if they just would have done some of these controlled burns, if they had done this, they had done that, and I'm going, what are you talking about? I mean, does anybody even know what a 100-mile-an-hour wind is?
But you know, California has a history of, since California was settled by the Spaniards, you know, the Spaniards learned from the native people on how to manage the forest. And they restored it.
The Spaniards didn't even know there was a fire in the forest in the middle of the place. How would you even know?
They named it California.
I know.
They named it California, which means hot furnace. California, we've known about California's wildfires.
I know, but the issue was settled. The issue is, it's too big for us. It's like we've known about hurricanes. Yeah, we have. Now, are we going to?
Yeah, but the difference between the response of a hurricane in Florida and the fire response in California is that when the weather service says, "Hey, a Category 4 hurricane is barreling down on Tampa," the governor pre-deploys all kinds of resources. The mayor of L.A. went to a wedding and didn't pre-deploy anything. The reservoirs were empty, and a lot of the hydrants were actually missing.
There was one reservoir that was down for maintenance.
Yeah, and that reservoir was in the neighborhood that was decimated.
Yeah.
I'm not saying California did something nefarious, like purposely wrong. I think they were trying to do the right thing, and they want to restore California to its pre-human state. When people live there, you can't do that. You have to rake. You have to clear the brush. You have to clear the trees from the power lines. We learned that in Maui. They weren't clearing the brush. They weren't.
But here's my critique of this. Okay, I'm not gonna argue at all with, you know, should you do these things? you know, should the power lines be underground? Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to argue any of that stuff, but the enormity of the task, the place we're talking about, is what, and then you put 100, I've probably only been around 60-mile-an-hour winds twice in my life, and both times were pretty freaking scary. What is a 100-mile-an-hour wind with sparks in the middle of it? Yeah. The enormity, well, you know, the enormity of the task is huge.
Tom, did you know that more than half of all fires in L.A. County are started by homeless camps? Half. More than half.
There were fires in California before there were homeless.
I know, but more than half of the fires are started by homeless camps. And they've allowed homeless people to cook and do whatever they want in these areas that are of danger. When you live in a place that's called California, hot furnace, it would make sense to not allow people to start fires in those areas. And if you're going to let people start fires and cook campfires in parks and areas with brush that's down and dry brush with high winds, you're going to get
anybody normal, and I say normal, I'm not from California, even know what it's like to have a tenth of an inch of rain since May?
Yeah. Well, but California has had to deal with that, and that's why they probably need to build more.
I know, but everybody's, I'm saying, is the enormity of this. I'm not.
I know. They need to build more reservoirs that collect rainwater and snow.
Lou sent around, I don't know if you must have been on the list. Lou sent around a thing about a guy who's on the water board out there, and he was talking about how, some of the stuff is manageable. Enough water for the people. You know, do they have enough water? And the answer is yes. But the idea of you could be in. I'm not saying you're being flippant, but a lot of people, they got to do these controlled burns. Okay, fine. When I was out there,
More to it than
I know. But I was out there doing some jogging up in Hollywood Heights. First of all, in the canyons, why they would let people build there, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, and some of the home sites.
There's only one way in.
But I'm saying it. The road probably wasn't big enough for fire trucks. I'm looking over the side of the road onto the home site. It's got to be a 45-degree grade going straight down. The brush is, because they had rains that spring, the brush is a foot and a half high and it's dry as a bone. You tell me who would have the balls to have a controlled burn on that hillside.
Well, no, I'm not talking about controlled burn. But you could use mowers. You could use rakes.
You couldn't There's even stand on the thing. You know? I'm talking about. I'm saying that the terrain is like you've never seen it unless you've been there. It's how people live out there in these canyons. I have no. It's danger.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they have their own.
I think if we're going to spend $500 billion, a half a trillion dollars on rebuilding LA, we have to. Part of that has to be putting these power lines underground.
Well, I would agree.
We have to bury the power lines.
Then
we have to build reservoirs on the tops of these peaks. Whether they like it or not, you have to build these. If you're going to have people crammed into that valley, you have to build these reservoirs that can feed hydrants without electricity. So you're going to have to build reservoirs, and you're going to have to bury power lines first and foremost. And you're going to have more than one way in and out of these neighborhoods. I'm not in favor of rebuilding it.
The water infrastructure out there is an absolute work of genius started by a guy named Mulholland, hence the name Mulholland Drive, right? And as this guy was talking about on the tape, he says in 1973 it was pretty much finished, and they had 20 million people. Well, now they got 40. He said they've had a bunch of bond issues and they've had some work done, so they need at least one more reservoir that they need to build, because a lot of the reservoirs, not only are they full of water, but they're up higher, and that's where you get your gravity feed for your water. Because it doesn't do you any good if you can't pump it, right?
Yeah.
And he said, the funny part of it is now everybody on the Republican side of the fence immediately blames all the liberals. The fact is, in the last 64 years, there's been 32 years of Democrat and 32 years of Republican. So just for the people on the right to just go slamming Gavin Newsom. Matter of fact, this guy said the only governor that gave a crap, but actually if there was a project, kept calling us to see, make sure it was on time, was Jerry Brown. He says nobody else cared. Republican or Democrat. He was the only one that actually thought that this was a big deal. Reagan didn't care. Arnold didn't care. What's the other guy's name? The Armenian dude, Turkmenjian, the other Republican, he didn't care.
Well, again, the problem with California is the fact that it's not really a republic; it's more of a democracy.
And, well, they voted and for also, these. They voted for these bond issues. They voted the money.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was spent where it was supposed to. Well, it was supposed to get spent. I mean, Kevin's talking about that. He's probably right. I think Kevin's usually
and,
right.
Another problem with California is it's one party control, and that's the problem that.
Why do you say that? I just said in the last 64 years, there's been.
Well,
half
I know, but
half.
In the last 20 years, it's one party control.
I don't know about that.
It's one party control. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor, but he had no power. He had no power to do anything.
What do you mean?
He had no power to do anything. The
governor has a lot of power.
The state legislature runs the show there. Let's be honest.
Governor can do a lot. He didn't distinguish himself. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, Arnold. Given his stance during COVID, I lost a lot of respect for that guy. I lost a lot of respect for Twisted Sister's lead singer, too, Dee Snider. Mr. Contrarian in the 80s, but Mr. Conformist during the COVID, right?
It's
same thing with Howard Stern, right? Mr. Contrarian up until the COVID, and then all of a sudden he's a COVID Nazi, right?
Well, a lot of people were believers, I would say that when it first started...
Well, I think they had to for their jobs, honestly.
They had to comply. Here's my bitch on that, Hal. As a trader, if you put in 10 trades for people, I'm not talking about just buying stock and having it go up every year. If it goes up every year, that's easy. If it doesn't, well, it's not so much. But a regular trade, if you get a volatility trade where I'm trying to buy a 20 implied volatility and something, sell something that's 30, these are all good ideas. Okay, they make sense. You have some edge in the trade. You do those kind of things. I could explain why I did it to people. But a good trade doesn't mean a winning trade.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea is to try and find something where you can that you can make out 6 out of 10 times and be good enough where the ones that don't work out, you can scramble real quick and turn them into a break-even or something where they don't kill you. That's the beauty of it. All these ideas...
Well, it's like football, right? Yeah. My wife says... They didn't score a touchdown. I go, well, Lynn, a 2-yard gain is sometimes a great play.
Yeah.
And not every play goes for a touchdown, right?
But all this kind of management, you've got to be willing to take a little bit of a risk, monitor it. But nobody has this kind of thinking, and nobody in our politics. Maybe we're electing people that aren't that competent. I mean... Yeah. Look at the people we've had at president the last 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
The last 4 years, too. Look at them and compare them to the knowledge somebody like Churchill or Roosevelt or somebody like that had. Yeah. And we're not even on the same page.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks that, hey, these guys are cool. Well, they're, I don't know.
Well, if you really think about it, politics is somewhat of a religion, right? And you have people who... look up to these presidents like they're some sort of god. I mean, on the Republican side, they kind of view their presidents as gods, and on the Democrat side, they do the same. So one thing we have to know is these people are human. They're not God. They make mistakes. They have agendas. And that's what I like about the Austrian School of Economics. When they revisit history, they don't just look at the history the way historians look at it. They look at it from the perspective of what was the guy doing before he became president,
yeah,
and what did he do after he became president, and that really informs you of their presidency. They have agendas.
Well, I mean, right? it's one thing in the COVID to be scared, bleepless when this thing first hits and everybody's dying, and shut stuff down and say we're going to do this for 2 minutes. But as time goes by, you need to be able to say, okay, how many people have already had the COVID and survived? Well, looks like 10 million. Okay, well, those guys, we got to get them back to work because they're no danger to anybody, right? Yeah. I mean, there was things along the line. I mean, it's one thing to shut
down.
That's
one of the executive orders I did like that Trump signed yesterday, is that he's going to rehire all those members of the armed forces that were fired for saying, hey, it's my body.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
I don't want the vaccine.
But I mean, yeah. I don't have a problem.
That was great, and with back pay.
Well, I don't have a problem with the governor shutting stuff down and like shutting restaurants down. But now, a month later, when you're letting people go to the Walmart and eat hot dogs, and the restaurant across the street is closed, then I got a problem with that.
This is the problem I had with Newsom. He would shut down a restaurant, but then he kept a movie set open.
Yeah.
With their tented cafeterias. Or he'd go to the French Laundry and enjoy, you know, dinner out with his friends and family while everybody else was stuck in their house. In a place like California where we knew being outside was helpful.
Yep.
We knew that getting sunlight was helpful. We knew that exercise was helpful. We know that being stuck in a house with circulated air and people being sick makes people sicker and unhealthy.
Well, I got a good one for you. Remember, were you on the show when Angelique was still here?
I started, I think, about 2014, occasionally, like once every other month.
Yeah, she might have still been at. During COVID.
I was on during COVID, yeah.
Yeah, she was like go for walks on the lake, right? So, yeah. Of course, they didn't want you walking in the park.
Which is completely ridiculous.
Then they said you could walk, but you couldn't stop. Yeah. So she's walking along on the lake. So there's nobody there. There's a bench. She's out like 2 miles. Sits down to watch the sunrise or whatever. And a couple of cops come by and they give her hey, you got to keep moving. And I'm thinking,
yeah.
Angelique, a very nice figure. I think they just wanted to see her walking away.
Well, I love Tyrus, the big wrestle champion that's on Gutfeld's show. Tyrus said he was flying with his daughter, and his daughter had this big 44-ounce soda or something that she got in the terminal, and it was empty. And Tyrus was like, "Why are you carrying that around? Why don't you throw it in the garbage?" Well, on the plane, she's sitting on the plane with her mask down, which was completely ridiculous because that air is so clean on those airplanes. But she's sitting down on the airplane with her mask down, and anytime a flight attendant walked by, she would put her mouth on the straw.
God. What?
For the entire flight to get around it, right?
Well, that was one of the most bizarre things. The people they said that the stuff on the plane was safer than being outside. Is it possible that anybody? This was a Harvard thing. Harvard come up with every conclusion that you pay them to come up with?
What's that?
Do they come up with any conclusion that you pay them to come up with?
I think you can. I mean, if you give somebody a federal grant, I'm sure the person receiving the grant. I've never received a federal grant. I tried for one federal grant, and I just came to the conclusion that the questions I want answered, the federal people giving the grant didn't want those questions being even raised. So, you know, if you're getting a grant from the federal government, I'm sure in the back of your mind, you got to make sure that you twist it in a certain way that makes them happy so that you keep getting that grant money.
Well, you mentioned what Hal was saying earlier, or what Carl was saying. If given, you know, the back and forth that we're starting to see in the presidential policies, you know, which isn't to say a Democrat will win next time, and who the hell knows?
It's the erosion of the republic. That's what it is. It's no longer rule by rule of law. It's rule by man. Right?
Well, would anybody rational? If you all of a sudden, if you're making widgets, and the Chinese are bringing widgets here at half the price, and they drop a 100% tariff on the widgets, so now you can be competitive. Would you think for a second that you would make a 20-year investment in a widget factory, thinking that this tariff policy is going to last for 20 years? I don't see how you could.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you're rolling the dice. You got to calculate the probability that the regulations that the current president puts in place are going to be reversed by the next person, right? And under that calculation, you get an expected value. If that expected value is negative, you're not going to do it.
Well, that's right.
Therein lies the problem. That's the problem with Keynesian economics. The Keynesian model is we cut taxes during a recession to boost the economy. We increase government spending during a recession to boost the economy. And then when the economy recovers, we reverse those fiscal policies, reduce government spending, and we raise taxes to pay for the deficits. But what that creates is the problem we're talking about. If you're constantly lowering and raising tax rates, how can firms plan for 20 years? That's why you got to just pick a rate that is competitive with the rest of the world and just leave it and don't touch it. And then firms can make more accurate predictions. Entrepreneurs can make more accurate predictions regarding the future.
Well, the turn was And what Hal's, and I'll give the background of what Hal's talking about. In just about any economy, I mean, it's just, I don't know if it's endemic in people or what it is, you always have, economy never grows in a straight line. I mean, no economy since the start of mankind. There's always, I'll call them business cycle recessions and expansions, which are, I think, to a certain extent, are fairly healthy. What this means is, if things are going good, everything's going okay, people kind of push it a little bit. They overinvest. They over this. And all of a sudden, there's too many factories. There's whatever you run. Everybody's running.
People learn from failure, right?
Then all of a sudden, it gets to be a little too much, and there's not enough. It can't keep going. Then it goes down. But these are kind of.
But Tom, that only works. People can only learn from their failure if they're allowed to pay the full cost of those decisions.
Okay, but
I had the discussion on Twitter yesterday with regard to the NBA. The WNBA wasn't promoting Caitlin Clark hanging out with Taylor Swift during the Chiefs game, right? They didn't post anything. And a lot of people were criticizing them, WNBA, for that, for not doing that. It's not that they're not very good at social media or marketing. It's the fact that they're subsidized by the NBA. And those subsidies create moral hazard because you're not paying the full cost of bad decisions. And that's the problem. And the way to save the NBA is to remove the subsidies. I mean, think about the NBA, the male league, subsidizing the female league, creating moral hazard in the female league. Talk about sexist. And it's not very women empowering, let's just say that, right? What the NBA needs to do is just cut the ties.
Well, but they're trying to create. There's more women in this country than men. They're trying to create women basketball fans.
Well, that's fine, but the problem is the subsidies. They're not paying the full cost of the bad decisions. If they weren't getting the subsidies, they would be promoting the heck out of Caitlin Clark and Taylor Swift and inviting Taylor Swift to come to WNBA.
Taylor Swift's a real hugger, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. Yeah. Man, I'm not a big Taylor Swift fan. I would have been more excited if she was hanging out with Lars Ulrich from Metallica.
Oh God.
And James Hetfield.
But if you're sitting next to her and they score a touchdown, you better expect a big hug. Boy, she's a hugger.
Yeah. Well, I'd rather see her get a high five from James Hetfield.
You're a high five guy. You're not a hugger.
No, I'm a fist bumper and high fiver. I'm not much of a hugging kind of guy.
Some people are big huggers.
Yeah, that's just not me.
Because
I don't even like massages.
I don't think Caitlin Clark.
I don't even like massages, Tom.
Oh yeah.
Somebody give me a massage just gives me the willies.
Oh God, I don't think Caitlin Clark got hugged more in her life. But you know, it doesn't make her bad. Let it be. Yeah. You know.
Well, they know the camera's on, right? They know the camera's
on. Did you ever talk about it? Why are we talking about this on Stocks and Jacks? Did you ever come across somebody, especially, you know, everybody in every society? I mean, this is kind of weird, but we studied this in psychology in school. One of my Dr. Blades, listen, every society has kind of a personal space number. You know, where if you're in an elevator, you'll stand next to somebody, you're 4 feet apart. But if somebody else moves in, then you can be 3 feet apart. Well, then finally you squeeze together. But there's a place where if you're talking to somebody, how far away from you they're supposed to be. You know, in America. Or in most parts of America, but then in Japan, I think it's a lot closer, right? And it puts you off right away. And
well, then there's Judge Reinhold, who's a close talker in the Seinfeld episode, right?
Well, did you ever come across like a very attractive lady, and she's like real close to you, and you keep backing up a little bit, and all of a sudden your shoulders are up against the wall, and you can't go any further.
Yeah. Well, I had a male student that was either a close talker. Or I think he liked me, and he was really in my, you know, my grill.
Yeah,
and it made me uncomfortable.
That's what I'm honestly saying. It's really kind of weird. What was the line in the Natural? Judge, you're kind of close. I don't know if those are my toes I'm feeling or yours. All right, you've been joshing around long enough. Are we gonna these interest rates? Are they gonna keep going down here? I don't see him. I'm seeing what I just read about the 10-year and the near-term rate. If they want to get the short-term rate down, which it appears Trump wants to do, you're going to have to pour more money in the system. I don't think if you pour more money in the system that you're going to gain on it because your long-term rates are going to go up.
But, Tom, you got to remember, in the age of interest on reserves, the Fed can add money and keep it somewhat bottled up with interest on reserves, right? Because remember what interest on reserves is.
Yeah.
It's a price floor for the federal funds rate. So they can pour money into the system, but the problem with that is it does leak out. And it ends up leaking out to the very, very wealthy, the wealthy investors who probably use it to buy a bunch of things on margin. And that, I think, is what's been fueling a lot of the inflation.
Right, but right? I think what you're talking about is we I know this is unpopular because it hasn't been around for 40 years with the inflation stuff, although what you're talking about is the real rate of interest, which the Fed can mess with by putting money in the system in a reserve. I'm talking about the anticipated inflation part on that, where if I loan you money for 10 years, if I think the inflation is going to be 5% a year, I want my 2.5% real
interest. Yeah, you want an inflation premium, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's risk.
Right? And I think right now, if they start messing with the short term to make it go lower, they're going to just put a bigger number on the inflation premium, and we're going to see a continuing of the short-term rate going down and the long-term rate going up. It's been my prediction now for a year, and so far I've been right.
Well, but the move, if you look at this chart I tweeted, it shows all the yields from the 1 month, the 20-year. And, you know, maybe it was just that one-off thing that happened because of that inflation report last week. But all yields were heading up until last Wednesday. And they've been heading down. So we'll see where that goes. I call it a dynamic yield curve because you can see the yield curve today, literally today, relative to what it was yesterday, relative to what it was 2 years ago. Yeah, it's a dynamic yield curve.
It's huge. Huge difference. Yeah. Massive difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
at the same time, though, if you look at the break-even inflation rate that the Fed publishes, which is the TIPS spread, it's still trending higher. So when you look at the difference in the TIPS yield and a treasury of the same maturity but not adjusted for inflation, a conventional, man, investors expect inflation. I mean, that thing's trending higher. So there's a lot of confusing signals out there.
Well, is there any investors, bond investors, I'll use the term, I could say wise up, but you had a Fed that went out and bought $5 trillion worth of stuff. So if you would have sold bonds saying, hey, they're putting so much money in the system, the inflation rate's going up, these bonds are going to go down, they buried you because they bought them all.
Yeah.
That's kind of never happened. But right now, if I'm right, I really don't want to be right, 2 years from now, your 10-year rate's 6.5 or 7, I think that's a problem for the market.
Yeah.
No, how big is the problem?
What I am hoping for is that government spending is reined in.
How's that going to happen?
I don't know, but I'm hoping the government spending is reined in. Maybe a couple of these departments are closed, and there's a hiring freeze in Washington, D.C. Maybe we get spending under control, and then on the supply side, remove some of these restraints, and hopefully supply expands, which is deflationary. I'm hoping that's what happens because I really need the mortgage rates to come down. I need the economy to expand. I need these yields to come down. I need the deficit to shrink so that I can get into a lower interest rate with my VA loan here in North Carolina. That's what I'm hoping for anyway.
This is what you just said. There's no way anybody could argue against it.
Yeah.
Except I'm going to. It's good radio. I think things are so balled up.
They are. Yeah.
That, I mean, if you look at what's happened to the housing prices, okay, they've gone from, you know, what I'm going to say, 250 to 400 since before and after COVID, right, or 260 to 400.
Yeah.
And you might say, we've had people come on CNBC and we've had learned economists like you say, well, we're 2 million houses short. And somebody was telling me that last night. We're 2 million houses short. You know, that's a problem. But the inflation, people, it's so insidious right now. I don't even know how to describe it. You'd have to teach me how to write this. We can't build 2 million houses, because the intelligence would be, if we went out and built 2 million houses, now all of a sudden there isn't this great demand for housing and there isn't such a shortage, the price would somehow go down from 400 back to 300. That would be in the textbook.
You know,
but the problem is, what's not in the textbook is because the inflation has so bashed the factors of production of a house. I don't think you can build a house for less than 300 right now. So therein lies the rub. The assumption is somebody can go out and build 2 million houses at the old price of 250. I don't think you can, because the wood and the paint and everything else has tripled along the way. I think most houses now at 400, you can't replace the place for 400.
I think maybe building codes have to be altered and maybe weakened, because, you know, I was showing.
Well, you can build a piece of crap printers. For less.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is, you can build. I showed students this video of a 3D printer that can build a house, a very nice house, with a concrete 3D printer in a week.
Really?
And I think we need more solutions like that.
Well, I'm all
I think
for
younger
that.
People are open. I think younger people are open to smaller spaces. I honestly do. And right now, you got too much engineering of neighborhoods. I mean, the government wants a certain type of neighborhood. They restrict it. In Oregon, building codes are very restrictive. And so I think if you relax that a little bit, you know, and you let markets figure out what flood insurance should be or what fire insurance should be. You know, one of the problems with LA is the fact that the government came in and said, we're going to cap fire insurance premiums. And what did insurance companies do? They're like, we're out of here. Meanwhile, demand for that fire insurance goes up.
Yep.
So whenever government gets in the business of setting prices, whether that's the price of money through interest on reserves or the minimum wage, or rent control or insurance prices, you get these problems. And so what we need is more freedom and less
we need some sort of truth.
Less control from government.
We need some sort of truth.
They need to let us be adults and figure it out for ourselves.
Well, I also think that the truth in numbers, I mean, if you and I would have signed up for a deal to make houses 10 years ago and use the CPI as our inflation gauge, I got news for you, pal. Yeah. You and I are out of business. We're one of the homeless setting the fires.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's.
Yeah, well, the CPI needs to be. These price indices need to be scrapped. We just need to look at how M2 is growing through time. I think that's a better
measure. I don't think there's anything wrong with the CPI if you did it honestly.
Yeah, but, you know, the problem with the CPI is the market basket constantly changes, quality changes. I mean, you can't compare a movie experience today to the movie experience of Jaws in 1976. You can't compare those two movie experiences, right? So when people talk about this movie today is grossing this amount of money and it's the highest grossing picture of all time, you can't do that because, one, there's more people in the United States. Two, the quality of the movie is different, which means they can charge a higher price for the seats and the sound system and the digital quality of the picture. I don't know. So the problem with it is it's really hard to capture the substitution effects and the quality.
Well, let's talk about that next week, because I went through the changes for a Ford F-150. Now I can't find them again. They used to be in the CPI, but they could tell you every year what they added on and how much it was. It's probably still in there somewhere. I just can't find it. Yeah. Hey, have a good week, buddy. Are you guys back in school?
Yeah. Yesterday we had the day off, and today I have office hours from 11 to 1, so.
By the way, our guys, Russell and Kevin and me, are very fascinated by your History of Economic Thought class. And, boy, I'd love to tune in on that some night. And I'm going to dig through my place and see if I can find all the notes from my class. I probably still have some.
Hey, send me any notes you got, because I love sharing perspectives of all different kinds.
You're
of
assuming you can read my notes. I can't even read them. If I find something. By the way, thank you, bud, and have a nice week. SP Futures up 32, NASDAQ Futures up 140. We're bullish today, and we might stay bullish. Let's hope we do. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.